Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, August 31st, 2023. A South Sudanese politician says he will face President Salva Kiir at the ballot.
We formed the transition period for 3 years and now we extend it again for 2 years. All of these, most of the things have not happened.
And a Sudanese analyst says the conflict in Sudan can be resolved through diplomatic channels.
That means enhancing the parallel track of the war, which is political relations, looking for a negotiation or finding a peaceful solution for this horrific war.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The leader of the People's Liberal Party, Peter Mayen Majongdeet, says he's ready to contest for the country's top seat in the 2024 elections. Mayen was recently endorsed by his party as its flag bearer in the general elections scheduled for December next year. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
Mayen received the backing of a coalition of 10 parties known as Other Political Parties or OPP during a recent convention in the Western Equatoria state capital, Yambio. He told VOA earlier today that following his recent endorsements by his party and the Other Political Parties consortium, he is ready to contest for the presidency.
We had been in pre-transition period for 8 months. We extended the pre-transition for 6 months, and we extended again the pre-transitions for 3 months, and we formed the transition period for 3 years, and now we extend it again for 2 years. All of these, most of the things have not happened, but it can happen and can be implemented by elected government.
Some opposition politicians say South Sudan is not ready for elections based on the pending tasks in the revitalized peace agreement. Some key laws aimed at preparing the country for elections are yet to be passed by the National Assembly in Juba. But Mayen says regardless of the pending tasks in the 2018 peace agreement, the country should go for elections in 2024. He says if elected as the president of South Sudan, he will improve the living standards of South Sudanese.
Because I wanted to bring them prosperity, inspiration, and the South Sudan that they had inspired for a number of years. I want to relieve their suffering. I want to move South Sudan, move their father from where it is today. I will reform all sectors. I will reform the economic situation. I will initiate and prove by actions good governance.
The leader of the People's Liberal Party, who is also the former Minister of Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Preparedness, heads the political consortium known as Other Political Parties. He is the second political leader to declare his intention to run for the presidency after the incumbent president Salva Kiir. Mayen appeals to South Sudanese to use the ballot to create the kind of country they want.
The time has come for us to deliver the future that we have all yearned for years, we have worked for, our grandfathers and ancestors have died for, and that future, it has to be delivered now for the next generation in South Sudan.
The head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, the Troika countries of the United Kingdom, United States and Norway, say South Sudan is not ready for elections based on the unimplemented tasks of the revitalized peace deal. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
A political analyst says Sudan Armed Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan's recent departure from Khartoum and his relocation to the city of Port Sudan, as well as his first trip abroad since the start of the conflict in mid-April, signals a shift in Sudan's month-long conflict. Hamdi Hassan, professor of political science at Cairo University, tells Nabil Biagio that these developments show a diplomatic and political settlement can be achieved by Sudan's rival groups.
This is a major shift in the course of war since now 4 months is that being trapped inside Khartoum and dedicated both of the two generals, two warring generals, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the leader of the regular army, SAF, and Mohamed Hamdan Daglo, the leader of the RSF, the Rapid Support Force. Now, when you are talking to going, manage to a very complex situation to leave the general command headquarters using the Navy and the Air Force and going to the Ritzy city of Port Sudan. I think this is very symbolic. That means enhancing the parallel track of the war, which is political relations, looking for a negotiation or finding a peaceful solution for this horrific war. So there is a kind of advantage for this side, for the regular army. For sure, al-Burhan is there. He went to Atbara and then to Port Sudan. Now he can travel abroad. He can manage a kind of support. So I think Egypt is an ally to the army for a long time. So going to Egypt, I think, is very significant. Egypt also in July managed a neighbor country conference summit, and it has its own initiative in order to find peaceful solution to the conflict in Sudan. So
indeed, it's an important ally, but what will come out of this visit? What do you expect to come out of it?
As I said, considering this a shift from trying a zero-sum game scenario that each one tries to get a very clear victory on the other, now you are talking about a kind of compromise, a peaceful settlement. So going to Egypt is a recognition for this kind of long truce between them. So if it is more successful, I think if he managed to go to two other key regional power, what I mean is Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates. So if you bring all these regional power on the table, I think we can see a kind of a peaceful scenario for a solution to this horrific war in Sudan.
A lot of people see Egypt as the ally of the army and might be interested in supporting the army militarily rather than supporting a peaceful settlement. And we have just seen that Egypt Air will resume direct flights to Port Sudan, where al-Burhan has relocated from Khartoum. How do you see the role of Egypt here?
You see, Sudan, from the national security Egyptian perspective, is an Egyptian business. So it is very a key issue for the national security. The historical bond between Egypt and Sudan, don't mention that you have more than 4 million Sudanese living in Egypt. So all these, national interest, we cannot leave it aside and say, no, this is a business for Egypt. So Egypt is keen, and this is the official position of Egypt about the integrity of the Sudanese state. They don't want the war to spill over and to become like a tribal war, an ethnic war. So when Egypt proposed its initiative in the summit of the neighbors, I think RSF, they accepted that. They didn't deny it. But the problem in Sudan, that the two parties are not prepared for a long stand truce for months. And this is what Egypt looking for. So if we combine all the other platforms for negotiation, Jeddah platform with Egypt platform, bring Chad in and also United Arab Emirates, I think we can reach a solution.
That's Professor of Political Science Hamdi Hassan speaking with my colleague Nabil Biagio from Dubai, the United Emirates. Some young leaders from South Sudan say they are preparing to hold a conference next year to provide a platform for uniting young men and women and promote peace within the Equatorial region and the entire South Sudan. For VOA News, Imoya Daniela reports from Juba.
Youth leaders announced preparation for their event at a news conference in Juba this week. Chancellor Daniel, the chairperson of the Central Equatorial Youth Union, says the conference is intended to foster civic engagement among young women and men in South Sudan. He says the conference will try to address some of the challenges facing the youth in Equatoria and promote peace in the region. Ladu says the conference will create an avenue for young women and men to address challenges facing them in the Equatorial region.
So the overall idea of coming up with this conference is to come together and interact and serve the way forward and find a common vision and strategic plans for the youth of Equatoria.
The head of the Eastern Equatoria Youth Union says the young men and women in the state capital, Torita, are eager to facilitate the conference. David Naye Lomoro says the idea of coming together to address challenges facing young men and women in South Sudan is long overdue.
We want all the youth from the three regions and also those who are interested in other states to join and see where the journey is going to start from. We are going to handle a lot of things in terms of resource mobilization. As a host, we say we will try to mobilize resources, which we also need the other states, the two states, to do the same.
My message to our youth is we all need to welcome this initiative and mobilize resources and mobilize ourselves, and we think positively rather than thinking negatively. We have to welcome it because we need to plant peace so that we invest peace in Equatoria as well as in the Republic of South Sudan.
Since conflict gripped the country in 2013 to 2016, most young men and women in South Sudan split along ethnic lines, resulting into the widespread of hate speech on social media and internet. Simple John is the young leader from Western Equatoria State. He says the idea of coming together is great, but youth leaders from Equatorial region should resolve few hitches before holding a conference. The young leaders say the conference will bring together at least 600 young men and women from Equatoria, Western and Central Equatoria states for many days of deliberations in the historic town of Torit. For VOA News, I'm Imoya Daniela reporting from Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The deposed president of Gabon, Ali Bongo, is calling on the international community to make some noise. Find out why after the break.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some Gabonese are expressing joy after the country's military seized power early Wednesday and detained President Ali Bongo Ondimma. The new leaders have named General Brice Oligia Nguema, head of the Republican Guard, as the head of state. A video circulating on social media shows deposed President Bongo appealing to his international friends to speak out on his behalf. African Union Commission Chair Moussa Faki Mahamat has condemned what he called an attempted coup in Gabon. Frank Jokten is a Gabonese human rights and democratic activist. He tells my colleague James Boati that the Gabonists are rejoicing because for the first time in 56 years, they will sleep without a Bongo as their leader.
The Gabonese people are rejoicing. The Gabonese people are happy. They're satisfied. Like I said earlier, 56 years of a dynasty, of a family ruling over Gabon is finally over. So the Gabonese, for the very first time, are going to sleep in Gabon for a long period of time without a Bongo leading them or controlling the country. And that's very refreshing.
Yet, it seems the future of the country is uncertain because we don't know what the military is up to.
That is correct. But right now, the Gabonese people are rejoicing because they're free. They're free from a family that ruled over 56 years. And as you said, the military just took control of the country less than 24 hours. I hope that they will be sensitive to the Gabonese people. And we've been noticing that they've been walking in the street, talking to the Gabonese people, encouraging them not to destroy everything, that everything will be all right. So I think that they are sensitive to their people. And if they continue like that, I think it's a matter of time that they will relinquish power to a civilian government.
There are reports that the military junta has named a transition leader. Do you know him? What's your reaction?
I don't know him personally, but I know that he's the chief of the Republican Guard. So it's the branch of the army that is supposed to protect the president. And it's the branch of the army that is the most and the best equipped in Gabon. I'm very delighted to see that they chose this time to be on the side of the people. And instead of shooting at the people, this time they chose to be on the side of the people and free the people from a tyrannic regime.
Now, President Ali Bongo, there were reports earlier that he has made appeals to his what he called his friends abroad to make some noise on his behalf. What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, I think we all saw the picture, and I was kind of saddened to see him like that. Because we can see that he's not even thinking properly because he doesn't realize really what happened. He appears to be confused. He's asking where is his children, his son, his wife, and he's saying that they arrest him, and he doesn't seem to understand why he was arrested, and he doesn't know what's going to happen to him now. So he's a very confused man, and right now I feel really sad for him. But the truth of the matter is he's been in power for the last 14 years, and then he wanted to add 5 more years. He was not attentive to his people. I do not know who will be attentive to him. And the way that he's being kept, I mean, it looks like nobody brutalized him. So people are treating him better than he treated the Gabonese people.
And this all stemmed from elections that were held on Saturday, and the results were announced. So what do you make of the results of the election?
Yes, the result was made public, I believe, around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And it was declared that Ali Bongo won the election. But we all know, with the enthusiasm of the people in the ground, that there is no way that Ali Bongo could have won that election.
That's Frank Jokten, a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist. He was speaking to my colleague James Batty. Gabon has become the latest country in Central Africa, where the army has seized control, following Niger, Burkina Faso, Guinea, Mali, and Chad, all former French colonies. Since 1990, a striking 78 of the 27 coups in sub-Saharan Africa have occurred in Francophone states, leading some commentators to ask whether France or the legacy of French colonialism is to blame. David Monda, professor of political science at City New York University, discusses with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi.
There is definitely an element of the legacy of France in many of these countries, the aspect of French misrule, the aspect of France maintaining illegitimate governments in many of these countries, the element of France using its rapid deployment forces to maintain the power of these regimes, whether it was in Côte d'Ivoire under Yuffie Boigny or in the Democratic Republic of Congo, formerly Zaire under Mobutu, or in Cameroon, you know, or even now in Gabon. But I think there's also another dynamic of the reawakening of the population in many of these Francophone African countries to say that the status quo ante, in other words, the way things have been and the way they have remained in the past, cannot continue. Now, the troubling trend with a lot of these Francophone countries is the only exit ramp in many of these contexts has been the military. In other words, the only institution that can then take over government from a lot of these illegitimate regimes is the military. And I think that is really where the troubling dynamic is, that there's no other democratic avenues, exit ramps to change or transition power from one regime to the next. And that is why we see military governments then taking control in many of these Francophone African countries.
Nigerian president has condemned the activities of coup plotters who have overthrown President Ali Bongo, and President Media Aide Ajori Nglal said Tinubu is working very closely and continuing to communicate with other heads of state in the African Union towards a comprehensive consensus on the next steps forward concerning how the crisis in Gabon will play. What could the African Union do to deal with the latest coup in Gabon?
So I think the African Union is really caught in a very difficult dilemma. I think very much like we saw in the case with Niger, we also see in the situation in Gabon, where civilian leadership has completely failed the public, right? So a large section of the population is disenfranchised with how the civilian regime has been moving things forward. In this particular context in Gabon, we know that the Bongo family, from Omar Bongo to Ali Bongo, and then he was even transitioning the government to have his son take over power from him, has really created a situation where the country is really run as a franchise of one family. And the AU, in addition to legitimacy questions, how does the AU intervene in situations where deposed leaders do not have legitimacy? How does the AU intervene? I think that's one big question. But secondly, does the AU even have the mechanisms to intervene in this context? And I think that will be another problem, because there's a crisis all over the Sahel in many of those countries. And then there's now this new crisis in Gabon. But even within the constituency of the AU itself, many of the member countries that would intervene in situations like in Niger or even in Gabon right now, there's also division within the AU. So I really don't see very much the AU will do outside of just the rhetoric of not wanting to have military takeovers. But I think at the next level, the AU will really have to work with the new administration in Gabon to figure out a transitional framework that will usher in elections and bring in a civilian regime. I really do not see many options for the AU in terms of intervention in Gabon, because the AU institutions are also very weak. Intervention in terms of restoring an illegitimate regime are problematic, and the AU even within itself is also very divided.
That's David Monda, professor of political science at City New York University, speaking with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi. At least 80% of Africa's population rely on traditional medicine for their basic health needs. This is according to the World Health Organization, which says there is a need to bring together Asian wisdom and modern science for health and well-being of people. And as the world marks African Traditional Medicine Day today, Thursday, the World Health Organization says it is committed to supporting countries to unlock their potential on traditional medicine. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
African Traditional Medicine Day takes place each year on August 31st by advocating for strengthening the linkage between traditional medicine and institutionalized care in line with the World Health Organization's strategy. According to the WHO, most countries in Africa use traditional medicine as the only healthcare service that's available, accessible, and affordable to many people on the continent. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says if scientifically validated, traditional medicine has the potential to bridge the gap in healthcare access for millions around the world.
Throughout history, people in all countries and cultures have used traditional healers, home remedies, and ancient medicinal knowledge to meet their needs for health and well-being. Traditional medicine is not a thing of the past.
Traditional health practitioners and traditional medicine are critical components of healthcare for millions of people, especially in rural areas. Harriet Chebet is a traditional health practitioner and the founder of Harriet's Botanicals, a traditional medicine company that retails indigenous medicine in Kenya, serving Africa and the diaspora market. She says the idea for her business came to her after she was treated in a traditional way for endometriosis, a condition in which tissue similar to the lining of the uterus grows outside the uterus. The condition can cause severe pain in the pelvis and make it harder to get pregnant.
I had this condition for 17 years since I was a teenager. So what happened in 2017 during my father's funeral, when I was in a lot of pain, a lady there, an old mama, approached me and said, "We're going to come and give you medicine tomorrow." And when they came, they gave me these traditional herbs or bark to boil. And for the first time in my life, I had a painless period. And that is how my business, Harriet's Botanicals, was born.
Chebet says traditional medicine should be regulated and that many traditional practitioners should be trained and have access to knowledge, as many of the practitioners in Africa are the elderly in marginalized areas. The contribution of traditional medicine as a major provider of healthcare service in Africa cannot be underestimated. WHO says countries should assess how best to incorporate traditional and complementary medicine into their health systems.
Traditional medicine has made enormous contributions to human health and has enormous potential. WHO is working to build the evidence and data to inform policies, standards, and regulations for the safe, cost-effective, and equitable use of traditional medicine. We urge all countries to commit to examining how best to integrate traditional and complementary medicine into their national health systems.
According to the World Health Organization, nearly 40% of pharmaceutical products today have a natural product basis and landmark drugs derived from traditional medicine, including aspirin, childhood cancer treatment, among others. It is estimated that at least 170 member states have reported to the WHO on the use of traditional medicine and have requested evidence and data to inform policies, standards, and regulations for its safety and cost-effective and equitable use. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojembo in Sacramento, California.
And that report by Maureen from California brings us to the end of this show for this Thursday, August 31st, 2023. We now leave you with Fally Ipupa and the song Stop à la guerre.
Stop à la guerre, stop à la guerre, stop à la guerre. Stop à la guerre, stop à la guerre. Vengaye, vengaye. Vengaye.
We have been listening to Fally Ipupa with the text of the song Stop à la guerre. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Kayla Williams, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.